Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling, primarily last night's big SummerSlam event at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. What an interesting night we had last night, folks. A very, very interesting night. Not everything was good. Not everything was bad. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a real deep dive into every single one of these matches, and we'll call out the good and the bad and give you a little peek behind the curtain of how things should work as opposed to sometimes how they end up working. So let's start out with the very first match, and that is Logan Paul versus Ricochet. Now, I'll tell you that Ricochet has not been one of those people who's been able to connect with the crowd. They admire him for his athleticism, but at the same time, they don't seem to have any real feel for Ricochet. This was really not that much different. I mean, the only pop that Ricochet seems to get is off how badly the audience dislikes his opponent. In other words, you got to put Ricochet up against someone who the crowd would root for, anyone against, in order for Ricochet to really get that pop. Not sure why. He's a really talented athlete and all, but he just doesn't really connect with the crowd. The exact opposite is Logan Paul. Logan Paul connects with the crowd. Some people really like him. Some people absolutely despise him. Now, you could say, well, that's a problem if you're a heel, but not really. You know, the problem is indifference. People are sort of indifferent to you one way or the other, whether you're a heel or a face. That's the kiss of death in your wrestling career. If you're a heel and people are cheering you, it's all right. You know, at least you're getting a reaction. If you're a face and they're booing you, it's all right. Did it hurt Roman Reigns much? You know, it happens. It's the non-reaction that is more worrisome. Now, I was expecting a pretty good match. I was expecting that these two guys, who are both proven that they're very good athletes, were really going to rise to the occasion. And I got to tell you, I was not disappointed. You can say what you want about Logan Paul. You don't have to like him. You don't have to like his gimmick. You don't have to like his persona. You don't have to like his blog show. You don't have to like him. But I'm telling you that I have never in my life, and I've seen a lot of people come and go in a wrestling business. I've watched this literally since I was walking around in diapers. I watched wrestling. I'm not kidding. I have never seen anyone who has come this far athletically and his ability in the ring in such a short period of time as Logan Paul. I just never have. I'm watching him, and if you didn't know, if somebody told you this guy's been around for 6 years, you'd say, well, I can see that. Seems to know his way around, seems to have everything down. I've never seen someone who's had just a few matches be at this level in my life. He did everything Ricochet did. He even did the standing moonsault, backflip moonsault, right? That, only a guy Ricochet's size could do. Have to be small and short and very lightweight and to do it well. I don't know. Logan Paul did it. He matched Ricochet virtually. Athletic move for athletic move, getting the same height, if not better height, doing some of the same basic moves. I was really, really impressed with him, and I was really, really impressed with his ability to get that crowd to really react to him one way or the other. Now, there were some people who said to me, did you see Logan Paul take a sip of the kid's water bottle and then hand it back to him and stuff, like he's, you know, almost like he's a face, and why is he, you know, doing those type of things? Number one, I don't know if that kid was a plant, because later on he took the water bottle back and walked away with it. I don't know if he said he was going to sign it and give it back to him. I don't know. I don't know what that was. But irregardless, no, I don't have a problem with it when you're that type of a heel. See, Logan Paul's heel persona is, I have such a big ego that the people who like me, I treat nicely, because I want them to like me. If they like me, then I'm all about them. If they don't like me, then they're this and that and the other things. I don't have a problem with him actually having fans. He already has fans. So what are you supposed to do? Say, well, those fans don't exist? Logan Paul already has a very highly rated show. What are you supposed to say? Oh, no, those listeners don't exist? So you're much better off having him just basically be a smug, arrogant, I have my fan base and they like me and I like them. I don't need you guys. As opposed to just saying, I hate everyone, because that wouldn't work. So Logan Paul did a fantastic job last night. Fantastic job. Ricochet was very, very, very good, too. I expected a great match. I got a great match. The ending of this match is my only issue with this match, and let me explain why. I realized having somebody hand Logan Paul brass knuckles is to try to help keep Ricochet strong. He lost, but the only reason he lost is because someone handed Logan Paul brass knuckles. If you can hit Ricochet with a knockout punch with brass knuckles, you can hit him with a knockout punch without brass knuckles. And that's exactly what you did twice to Seth Rollins, and it knocked him completely unconscious for minutes. So why would you need the brass knuckles? Right? If Logan Paul's punch is that powerful that it can knock out Seth Rollins for a minute and a half twice, then that's enough to knock out Ricochet, correct? So the brass knuckles were there for only one reason. See how good Ricochet is? He wouldn't have lost without the brass knuckles. But wait a minute. You just said that Seth Rollins couldn't even get up from a knockout punch. He floored Roman Reigns with a knockout punch and knocked him out, remember? So why all of a sudden does Ricochet merit, I need brass knuckles to do it? Ricochet's not the Big Show. Ricochet is not Brock Lesnar. So I'm not sure why that was added other than to try to make Ricochet look tougher than he is, and I think it's unnecessary, Mike. I think he just should have hit him with a knockout punch.
And really, if you think about it, they keep making a big deal about he's got titanium in his fist, right? Well, titanium is a metal. What you call it is a softer metal than titanium, so you would think that the titanium would be a stronger metal, right? So he really doesn't need that knockout punch. And you're right, this guy, if you tell me this guy's been around 6 years, you know, I say, I'll believe you. And to tell you the truth, this is he's got the Miz's. Logan Paul has got the Miz's sort of thing down pat, and he's a better. I love the Miz to death. Don't get me wrong. We'll see him later, but he's got the Miz's thing down pat, that arrogant type of thing, and he's a better athlete.
He really is. I mean, you can say what you want about Logan Paul. I know a lot of people don't like him. But if you can't see that that guy came into this federation with minimal training, had to be minimal. How long could he be training for? Minimal training, and he's able to do what he does? That's incredible. And I don't want to hear about Bad Bunny. Bad Bunny's good, too. He's not Logan Paul good. He's just not, because there's little things, reaction, selling, timing, ring placement, that a lot of people don't understand. All they say is, did he hit the move right? Is he getting heat? Well, okay, those are two major things. Yeah, you got to hit your moves right, and you got to get heat if you're a heel. But then there are other things that every wrestler has to do, your ring placement, your timing, your selling ability, your ability to get the crowd into what you're doing, your ability to continue to sell something even after that moment is gone, which laughably last night was thrown out the window a few times. I've always hated in wrestling where someone falls out of the ring, clutches their knee in agony, the referee's down there saying, can you continue? I don't know. You're practically in tears. They're saying, well, he could have a broken knee. This could be the end of his career. And the very next move you do when you roll into the ring is, I'm going to run up the turnbuckles and springboard off. Okay, well, I guess your knee's not hurt. I hate when wrestlers do that. Logan Paul does not do that. He already has that baked into the cake that there's people who get it. See, this is the difference. You can be a really good athlete, and you can be trained to be a professional wrestler. If you're a good athlete, you can certainly do professional wrestling. But one thing you're not going to be able to teach is the little tiny things, the attention to detail. And you either have that or you do not have that. Now you can learn a few things, but when it's instinctual, it's a hell of a lot better. And I think Logan Paul's is instinctual. I am ready to make a pretty bold statement here. If Logan Paul was to say, I want to be a full-time WWE superstar, there is a good chance that he would become one of the top guys in the WWE of the last 10, 15, 20 years. Because somewhere within that smarmy, I think I'm better than everybody else, cocky, F the world, it's all about me persona, is a guy that people secretly want to root for. And there is no problem turning him face when the time comes. None, zero, because he has an equal ability to emote a sort of a sympathy and a camaraderie with the crowd as he does a hatred. And that's so uncommon, even when you're a highly trained wrestler, let alone when you're not. So I give this match very high marks. I thought this was one of the best opening matches I've seen in a long time, Tom.
Marcus, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, honestly, like, there are very few wrestlers that come along in this generation that have the ability to do what Logan Paul does. Logan Paul has that crowd, regardless of whether they love him or hate him. He already had fans. And like you said, a couple of shows ago, no one ever said he was mean to kids. So to do that thing for that kid, I thought that was cool. I don't really like cool bad guys. I like bad guys to be bad guys. That's why it works for Roman Reigns. It works for Logan Paul just as well. Logan Paul has these things in a relatively short amount of time that he's been a wrestler, has the ability to capture the fans' imagination, make them hate him, and he has that psychology. He has the ring placement. He has the athleticism. Very rarely will you see a wrestler come along in that short a period of time that has those things. It's almost like it came just natural, and that is just absolutely impressive. Now, I will be the first to say I don't particularly like Logan Paul because I've seen his YouTube thing, and I just think it's ridiculous. But throw all that aside, and his ability in the ring is nothing short of impressive. And he's got the right guy to work with in Ricochet. And the fact that they ended the match that way shows me that they're looking to do something with Ricochet and Logan Paul both.
Dude, I don't like the ending of the match because if you could knock out Seth Rollins and you can knock out Roman Reigns with one punch with nothing in your hand, and you can hit Ricochet with that knockout punch with the brass knuckles in your hand, then you could have hit him without the brass knuckles in your hand, and that should have been enough. So I think they overkilled the ending, trying to make Ricochet look good in defeat. I think they overkilled the ending. Aside from that, an absolutely great match. The thing that floors me When this match was over, I said to myself, it's so unusual to see a wrestler the athletic quality of Ricochet in the ring, and at the end of the night, you're not talking about Ricochet, you're talking about Logan Paul. I watched him basically match Ricochet move for move. In fact, he got better height on some of the things in Ricochet. These frog splashes and these other things that he's doing, it's incredible. It's incredible. Every once in a while, no matter what sport you're in, come along, an athlete will come along that just instinctively seems to be made to do that. Baseball player, hockey player, basketball player, boxer, whatever it happens to be, you'll find one that you say, man, there's just so many intangibles. There's so many things about this person that you really can't teach, and they just know. That's Logan Paul, Todd. I mean, he's the one everybody's talking about today, now Ricochet.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, that match last night with Logan Paul and Ricochet. And last night when I watched that match between those two, last night with Logan Paul, he wrestled like a veteran. Like he's been in it for a long time. This is how he knows the business more.
I'm just very impressed with it, and I said to myself at the end of this match, you got to try to get him on a more regular basis because you're lacking charisma in the WWE. There's a lot of lack of charisma. There's a lack of that natural ability to draw heat or a pop or whatever it happens to be, and Logan Paul's one that can do it. You got to try to get him. Oh, and what did we always say, by the way? Once again, people will accuse us of patting ourselves on the back, but did we not say when so many of these wrestling experts said, it really helps if you don't come at wrestling from a fan's perspective? Incorrect. Logan Paul comes at wrestling from a fan's perspective. Logan Paul's a wrestling fan. Logan Paul knows what he liked to see when he was watching wrestling. And then you just imitate it. You have to be a fan. It's virtually a prerequisite. And he's proving it. He just happens to have the athletic ability to pull it off. So great opening match for SummerSlam. I did have a slight problem with the ending, but still, really, really strong match. Then to my surprise, Brock Lesnar and Cody Rhodes is second. Now, I know if Brock's not the main event, usually he's very early on. I guess he likes to just get his stuff done and go home. But I was surprised, and I think you'll find that the main problem with SummerSlam's card last night is the order the matches were in. The matches were in an order that did not favor certain matches and did not help the participants in those matches. And we'll get to more of that later. But anyway, I'm expecting a short match. I'm expecting I expect Cody Rhodes to win, but I expect Cody Rhodes to win in a way that's going to be a little more protective of Brock. And I'm going to tell you something. Once again, you don't have to like Brock Lesnar. He worked his ass off in that match. Brock Lesnar could have easily walked in there and said, I'm doing a 5-minute match. Now, who's going to argue with him? He always does. Brock Lesnar could have easily done other things. And Brock Lesnar helped tell a very, very important story. Cody Rhodes owes Brock Lesnar dinner, and I'll tell you why. I've seen Brock Lesnar throughout his whole career. I've seen him lose. I've seen him win. I've never seen Brock Lesnar tell a better story than he told last night. With his facial expressions, with his mannerisms, with his body language, he told a great story. And that story is, I'm giving Cody Rhodes the easy way out because I don't hate Cody Rhodes. Just stay down, get the count out, go home. We go home. He won't do it. Time and time again. And as Brock Lesnar becomes more frustrated and angry and you see the more desperate Brock Lesnar, who says, you know what, then if that's the way he wants to be, then I'll just hurt him. And then realizing, even if I hurt him, he's not going to give up. And then realizing, and this is the key, he blew me up. I punched myself out. He's tired. He's sweating profusely. He's red-faced. He's getting slower. His muscle mass is causing the lack of oxygen, and he's starting to wear down. And then you realize it's the conditioning. Cody Rhodes isn't sweating. Cody Rhodes may be hurt, but Cody Rhodes is not sweating. He's not panting and puffing. Brock Lesnar is done. He's had it. He outlasted him. Great story. Now, I'm hearing that the Brock Lesnar handshake at the end was, in fact, scripted, but the hug was not. That the hug was genuine. The hug was genuine because they knew. I think Brock Lesnar, in his heart of hearts, knew I just pulled off one of my best matches in the last 5 years. This was indeed one of my best matches. And it really was. And it told the story that needed to be told with Cody Rhodes. And that is, no, Cody Rhodes is not the strongest guy on the planet. No, he's not actually the best wrestler on the planet. But he's not going to quit. You are going to have to beat him, and it's not so easy. It's not that easy. This is the story we said they needed to tell. All that's missing now is for Brock Lesnar to have grabbed that microphone and said what we said he should say on Friday, which is, this is why I did it. You proved yourself. Now go finish your story. But he said it with his body language. It was perfectly done. I saw zero mistakes. Lesnar tried hard. It was a long match. You could tell Lesnar was physically exhausted for real. The cool thing about Brock Lesnar, though, is this. Don't mistake him sweating and panting and puffing and turning red for he's got bad cardio. Brock Lesnar has good cardio for a guy his size, but his body is just one of those that sweats profusely when physical activity comes. And because he's so pale, his skin turns like reddish. He always looks like he's trying really hard. He always looks like, man, this is a knockdown, dragout. Look how exhausted he is. Cody Rhodes, on the other hand, has come from a different school where you conserve your strength, you conserve your energy, you work on your cardio, and he always looks fresh. Now, once again, the deep dive into the bad part of the match. The bad part is the end. Cody Rhodes went through hell. Cody Rhodes was busted. The idea behind this match is Cody Rhodes could barely stand on his own 2 feet, and he would not quit. Absolutely would not quit, and eventually found a way to overcome a absolutely worn out and exhausted Brock Lesnar. And then immediately gets up and starts climbing the turnbuckles and raising his arms and says, woohoo, I won, instead of just collapsing in a heap, which is exactly what should have happened. So the fact that I gave every single ounce of my being to beat Brock Lesnar because I refused to quit, but I have nothing left. Instead, he gets up, he says, I'm smiling, I'm happy, I'm dancing. I hate it. I hate when wrestlers do that. If the story is that you spent yourself to win, then you're spent. Get some help from the ropes to get to your feet. Clumsily raise your hand if you want to. Kneel back down on your knee. Show the fans, I'm exhausted, I'm hurt, I'm tired, I'm broken, but I won. Not, oh, that was no problem. I could go again. You don't want that because it undermined everything you just went through. It undermined all the great work that you guys did to show that Brock Lesnar finished you despite how badly you're hurt, because now you're looking like you're not hurt. I don't like when they do that, Mike, but this was a very, very strong match nonetheless.
It's like you said, this is one of the best matches he's had in the last 5 years. I mean, I put this match on par of what he did with AJ, you know? I mean, basically, AJ and what's-his-name are the same in terms of cardio. AJ, he could wrestle for 30 minutes, he could wrestle for 10 minutes or 30 minutes. You're not gonna be able to tell the difference between AJ Styles at 10 minutes and AJ Styles at 30 minutes. That's what Cody Rhodes is right now. And Cody Rhodes is what, 10 years younger than AJ? So
yep.
So I mean, yeah, that's the deal. And I don't like the ending, but I do like, I mean, I've known people like Brock Lesnar that I wasn't all that big when I was younger, but I've known people, I've known people like that, that just the way their body is, that they sweat and they get red and all this stuff that Brock Lesnar does.
Yep.
And he may not, they may be cardio, they may have really good cardio like Brock Lesnar, but it's just his body. It's just what his body does. It's just the way that his body is made that he does that, you know?
And it makes it look so much more real. I've known people like that too, because I'm one of them. If I got in the wrestling ring within 5 minutes, I was a sweaty mess. I was pretty good cardio. There were times I wrestled 3-4 matches a night. But there's just something that would make me sweat. I don't know. And I'm very pale, so my skin would turn red. And if somebody chopped me or hit me or whatever, that skin would turn red. That's just the way it was. Lesnar, because of that, has that extra advantage of always looking like he's working real hard. And it's really not anything to do with him. It's just the way your body is. Very, very strong match, especially on Lesnar's part, I thought, Tom, because, once again, Lesnar's one of these guys who probably calls his own shots, could have mailed it in, could have done whatever, took the money and ran and said, just pin me and we'll go home. He didn't do that. He told a very compelling story. They put on a long match and a good match, and I thought it was excellent.
I, I have never seen Brock work so hard in telling a story and in a wrestling match that long to put somebody over so strong. That, I mean, Cody's over, but Brock Lesnar told the story that you – said needed to be told just with the handshake and just with and the hug. And I thought that was cool. I thought the fans really took to it. They liked it. I'm agreeing with you definitely that the hot dogging kind of at the end where he's, you know, everything that Cody just went through, he's, you know, he's just kind of undersold that he just got, you know, beat like a dog.
Right.
Brock Lesnar is a phenomenal athlete. The fact that he sweats a lot, I mean, and Cody looks just completely fresh after a 20-minute match. There's a lot of wrestlers that have that. Chris Benoit is one of them. I keep going back to him. There was confetti falling from the ceiling after a 30-minute match he just had, and it was just bouncing off him. He had got 1 ounce of sweat on him. That was just—that's impressive. The amount of conditioning AJ, Cody Rhodes, Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels was the master of selling the aftermatch. Did he get up and walk out of the ring and raise his hands after he was done with Undertaker in Hell in a Cell? No, he was being carried. Even in the
Times when they actually had to help him back to the dressing room. Exactly. And that's what should have happened last night with Brock Lesnar, is Cody Rhodes should have had to have a hand being helped back to the dressing room so that people say, can you imagine being hurt so badly that you need to be back to the dressing room after it's over? But you, in the heat of the moment, when your adrenaline is flowing, you just refuse to give up. That's the story that needed to be told. Cody undermined his own story by doing that last night. And that is a rookie mistake. Unfortunately, it's not a rookie mistake anymore because everyone makes it. But there was a time in wrestling where if you made that mistake, you'd be called out. But now everyone does it. Now, Cody's no rookie. So I'm really surprised. That was the part of the match that shocked me the most, and I said, damn, I just wish he didn't do that. because that little tiny thing, Todd, is enough to make me say, see, it undermined everything that came before it.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, about that match last night with Brock Lesnar and Cody Rhodes there. Like you said about that match, Lesnar always had that conditioning in him. And every time he wrestled a match, he didn't want to be in it that long, less than 20 minutes. But that match we witnessed last night, it was an old-school booking match.
Lesnar did a fantastic job. Cody did a fantastic job. SummerSlam was off to a flying start as far as I was concerned. Yes, the Logan Paul brass knuckles thing made no sense. Yes, I didn't like Cody doing the celebratory thing at the end. Thought it undermined the victory. Still, relatively minor points. So far, we're off to a flying start. Now here's where I'm going to explain to you why the order of the card is extraordinarily important. If you go to, let's say, a concert where five bands are playing, Metallica, Megadeth, and three bands you never heard of, or just barely heard of, or bands that you like, but they got one album out, or bands that I've heard a few of their songs. Metallica don't play first. You know why? Because then everybody goes home. That's why. Or they go out and they get a beer. The reason the opening band opens is so people can say, well, you know, I don't want to leave my seat right now because I don't know how many songs they're going to sing and the feature band's coming on. And you hope that, oh, they like a few of my songs, so that's good. Here's the problem. The matches that everybody cared about to a certain extent came too soon. And the matches very few people cared about came too late. You started out with a barn burner of a match, but the crowd was on fire. You then had Brock Lesnar versus Cody Rhodes, which arguably they called one of the main events. WWE themselves called it one of the main events. And next up, you had the Battle Royal, which, as I discuss it, you'll see why that is an important match. And then we'll go forward as to why the crowd was dead and why matches seemed bland and plain that would not have seemed that way. See, if Kiss is going to play a concert, you know, Rob Zombie's going to play a concert where there's all kinds of theatrics and there's all kinds of fireworks and the movies and there's props and there's this and that, they don't play first. Because if they do, then the next band who has none of that just seems plain. And they may be better band, but you say, that wasn't as good a show. All they did is come out and play. Rob Zombie came out, and there was all this stuff and pyrotechnics, and then this happened and that happened. That's why you don't play first. Unless the band who's playing after you is even better at it. Well, see, that was the problem with the WWE last night. But let's get to the Battle Royal. They only had a few people introduced, AJ Styles and LA Knight. LA Knight is absolutely on fire. And I figured he would win, and he did win. And it was a good thing that he won. That's what the crowd wanted. The crowd got what they wanted. So now this crowd, who has been treated to an awesome athletic contest between Logan Paul and Ricochet, been treated to a main event, one of the main events. Brock Lesnar versus Cody Rhodes, which was long and exhausting as far as the fans getting into it. Then the huge pop of LA Knight, where you just, we want him to win, we want him to win, we want him to win, but he's probably not going to. Oh, he did, and the whole crowd pops. Great. You're off to a great start. But that should have been probably the matches. If you want to sit Logan Paul and Ricochet first, I'm good with that. No way Brock Lesnar and Cody comes next. You got to mix the matches. If you want to know, and I know this is going to cause people to just go crazy on me, but the people who know me the best know I don't really care what people have to say about me. I'm going to tell you the truth as I see it. You want to know why the women's matches aren't the main events? Well, you found out last night, didn't you? Because nobody gives a damn about it. And they pretend they do because that's the thing. Oh, well, no, I'm an equal opportunist. I love women's wrestling. Yeah, then how come you don't cheer ever? How come you don't care about any of the participants ever? And then you wanted more women's matches on this card? They're not reaching you. Some with good reason and some I don't know why. Some I absolutely do not know why. But anyway, the Battle Royal was excellent. The right guy won, Mike, and the crowd popped. And, I mean, LA Knight is riding a sea of popularity right now.
Oh yeah, and they better capitalize on that. And I kind of knew there was going to be an extra guy to enter that Battle Royal, and we saw that, and we saw, this is how you're supposed to use somebody like Omos,
yes.
Right? Yeah, he didn't win.
Yep.
Yeah, he didn't win the Battle Royal, but, I mean, did Andre the Giant win every Battle Royal he was in? You know?
No, plus
so,
it took
yeah.
about half the crowd to take him out, so that was fine. That was fine. Battle Royal worked out just fine. The right guy won. Everything good. Seemed like there was more than 20 people in that, but whatever. Then comes a match that some people cared about, but really Shayna Baszler has done nothing, zero, to get people to really care about her, and the booking has done nothing, zero, to get people to care about her. And it's even been a little bit confusing of who's the heel and who's the face. By now, the crowd is exhausted. They've cheered all the way through Ricochet and Logan Paul. They've cheered all the way through Cody Rhodes and Brock Lesnar. They've cheered all the way through the Battle Royal, hoping against hope that LA Knight would win, and then when he did win, they cheered for 20 minutes after he won. And now here comes what should have been the second match of the night, and it's the fourth. And let's face it, the crowd is just like, yeah, we're tired. We're tired and we don't really care. Does it matter who wins? Is there something on the line of importance? No, there isn't. Then the WWE did themselves no favors because they said it's an MMA rules match, and clearly it was not an MMA rules match because every time Shayna Baszler or Ronda Rousey got knocked down, the referee stepped in the way and wouldn't let somebody come down on them for a ground and pound. I don't see how that's MMA rules. What you should have done is you should have told both of these women, look, when you go in there, just shoot. Don't hurt each other, but shoot, wrestle. Do some ground and pound. Just don't hurt each other. Throw some kicks. You can take a few kicks, I'm sure, real ones. Throw a few punches, just not in critical areas that would knock somebody down or something. And that's it. Make it look like an MMA match. The referee's not going to, if you knock the person down, instantly jump on them like they do in MMA. There was nothing exciting about this match. So what is it that you wanted the crowd to cheer about? They're not going to cheer Shayna because they're not even 100% sure that Shayna is the good guy. They're not going to cheer Ronda because they don't like Ronda. So you've given the fans nothing, and then you've put it forth after you've exhausted them. You would have got a much better pop if this was A, the opening match, or B, at least the second one. But you chose to make it fourth after three important matches that fans really cared about. That's not a good thing. That's why the order matters. You know, there are certain places on a wrestling card that's called the popcorn match. And they already know it. They already say, oh, well, you know, we got this match and the crowd's not really into it and we don't care. And we're going to put that before the main event. So you have a really good, you know, maybe a semi-main event. Then you have the popcorn match and then you have the main event. That way the crowd gets to calm down, not cheer so much, get themselves back to being not so tired, and then they're all up for the main event. If you exhaust the crowd and then say, well, I don't know why they weren't hyped for this match. Well, I do. They were exhausted. And you didn't give them anything to cheer about. So, yeah, it was bad placement. Very bad placement. And placement matters hugely in professional wrestling, just like it does in a concert. You're not going to place a band with a small following behind a band that sold all the tickets. You're just not going to do it. WWE did do this on this pay-per-view. This was bad placement for them. And they had to know it. I mean, they had to come out there in that fourth match saying, we can't beat Logan Paul and Ricochet for the athleticism, so we're not going to be able to outdo that. Brock Lesnar and Cody Rhodes just told a magnificent story, and it's going to be very, very hard to outdo that because they don't care about us like they do Brock Lesnar and Cody. LA Knight is everybody's favorite now, and he's just won a battle royal, and everyone's on their feet for 10 minutes cheering about it. How do we follow those three things when we're stuck in a match that's given us MMA rules, and this is the way you booked it? And the answer is you don't. That's why you don't put them forth. But you did. Match was at best fair, and I don't think it did anything for either one of them. If there's a strong point in the match, I'll tell you what the strong point is. If there was a strong point in the match, it's the ending where Ronda Rousey appeared to be actually emotionally upset that she lost. That says a lot. That actually was the first thing I saw that I said, oh, well, that was good. She really did emote that she was upset she lost. She was practically in tears. And I said, okay, well, that's great. But you think in a million years that this is going to make Shayna Baszler the big baby face that everyone's going to cheer? It's not. You handled it completely wrong as far as I'm concerned, Mike. And unfortunately, you know, I don't think it helped either woman.
Yeah, I don't think it helps the woman. And referee did not come off looking good because there was a point in the match when you could visibly hear Ronda Rousey talk, actually say, what the hell are you doing? This is supposed to be an MMA rules match. Get out the way. You could hear her say that, you know, and she had every right to say it because it was supposed to be an MMA rule. Now, there was a couple of good shots, you know, that they gave each other. One, I think Ronda gave Shayna a flying knee or whatever, and Shayna gave her the kick to the head. And I did like the ending of the match where she really couldn't do it, so what did she do? She bit her glove, you know, to make sure she got the finisher, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look, it wasn't – everyone's saying it's a stinker match. It really wasn't a stinker match for what you gave them. This is what you gave them to work with. You gave them the fourth position on the card after three excellent, exhausting, as far as the fans are concerned, matches, and you gave them a stinker rule stipulation match that didn't bode well in the WWE. And then didn't even stick to the stipulations anyway. So what's the crowd supposed to cheer for? Explain to me again why we're supposed to be cheering for Shayna Baszler. I mean, if Ronda Rousey, who has probably no say over storyline much, she might have say over the actual outcome. She might probably doesn't have any say over storyline. If Ronda Rousey wanted to put over Shayna Baszler, then Ronda Rousey had to clearly go out there and say, look, you want me to be honest with you? I felt sorry for Shayna Baszler. Yeah, I took her in, and yeah, I trained her, and yeah, I patted her on the ass and told her she's a good MMA fighter. She's not. Shayna Baszler ever hold an MMA championship? No. You see Shayna Baszler on a major UFC card? No. Is she a main event in a wrestling card? No. Because Shayna Baszler is average. She's a nice girl. We got along, but she's average. And I felt sorry for her. Because the one thing she wants to do in her life, she wants to be Ronda Rousey, and she's never going to be. See, at least then we'd say, well, Ronda's clearly the heel. And Shayna could have said, you know, I feel like I was lied to. Ronda told me this. Ronda told me that. Ronda, you know, said, you know, one day you're going to be my successor. And Ronda, she just lied to me to use me. So now what am I supposed to do? Everything that she told me, our whole friendship was a lie. At least we'd know who to cheer for. You didn't even do that. So this match fell exactly where it's going to fall, to people saying it sucked. It didn't suck. But it was set up in a position to suck. It was given stipulation to suck, and it was put in a in an order that it's not going to get big response from the crowd. No matter what match, unless it was literally the main event, it was going to get a huge response right there because fans were tired. And by the way, the WWE clearly understood that. You know why they understood that? Because the next match they wanted to get a response. So they said, well, we got to give the fans a match where they can just go for popcorn, sit on their hands and not worry about it and recharge their batteries so that you can all cheer for Drew McIntyre and Gunther. So if you really want the women's division to be taken seriously, you better tell the WWE to start booking some men's matches as the popcorn match to set up for the women's match that the crowd's going to cheer, because they haven't done that in a long time. Anyway, Gunther versus Drew McIntyre. I'm going to tell you something I thought I would never say. The moment Drew McIntyre and Gunther got in the ring before the bell rang, I said, Drew McIntyre's not winning. Drew McIntyre is not winning. His body language, his facial expression. I really, really like Drew McIntyre. I'm a big fan of Drew McIntyre, but this is not the same Drew McIntyre. He signed that contract, and for whatever reason, Drew McIntyre was not a happy man last night. And you could tell by his body language, his facial expression, and even how hard he tried. He knew he was losing, and he was fucking pissed about it. And for fans who were saying, well, this was an excellent match, no, it was not. It was not as good as Gunther versus Sheamus, and it was not as good as Gunther versus Sheamus versus Drew McIntyre either. Because at that time, they were all trying. This one, Drew McIntyre looked like, I'll walk through the motions and do what I normally do, but I'm not going to put great effort into it. And I think he was probably even pissed, and maybe rightfully so, that they booked him to hit the Claymore and for Gunther to kick out of it. That Claymore has been protected, protected, protected. And for Gunther to kick out of it is ludicrous because Gunther's not that big. He's not even as big as Drew McIntyre. So if you book that with me, I would say, yeah, that's really harming my finisher. That's ridiculous. Then they tried to protect Drew McIntyre by saying, well, he fell off the ropes and crotched himself, and that's enough to finish off any man. But then Gunther hit him with the double finishers and pinned him. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Drew McIntyre, this is his first feud. He's lost it. He realizes if you bring me in my first feud, I lose. You don't have much for me. I've signed a contract, and there's probably not much going on. Now, the only thing you're going to be able to do with Drew McIntyre from this point, and I hope you do it, is you've got to turn him heel. Because he's not working as a fan favorite anymore. He's just not. You wanted to make him that badass guy, and you're not doing it. You're just making him a guy. And I hope Drew McIntyre does not fall in that category of, if I'm not winning, I'm going to put in a half-ass effort, because he never was that way. But last night, as God is my witness, the minute they got in the ring, I said, Drew McIntyre's not winning. I can just tell by his body language and his facial expression, just not winning. And I was right. I'm kind of surprised. I really thought they'd make a move here, Mike, in some way, shape, or form, but I guess not.
I guess not. And look, you basically said what I was going to say about this match. I mean, and that's the, when I've got nothing to say about a match, and is to say, I agree with Marcus. And Marcus has taken all my words. It's bad because usually I have something to say about this match. I hate to see a guy who I generally consider a really good guy, a guy who actually had to go away and make himself into something big and then come back and be big again, you know, in Drew McIntyre. He's basically a, I don't want to say a self-made wrestler, but he had the, when he became Drew McIntyre, his career really started when he became Drew Galloway, right? So,
yeah.
So that's the deal. And I hope they turn him heel. That's all I got to say about that. I just don't want to see them basically, and I guarantee you this is why somebody like Zack Ryder is not back with the WWE, because Zack Ryder is gone much like Drew McIntyre went away and made himself a big guy. Zack Ryder has made himself at least into a lower main event guy, right? So I hope they don't bring him back, because I want to see that him remain that way. And I don't want to see him.
Yeah, because listen, they could have done a lot of things with Drew McIntyre. They didn't have to bring Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre didn't have to put his name on a contract and say, fine, I'm signing. I'm sticking with the WWE. And at that point, the WWE could have said, okay, well, now that we're bringing you back fresh and you've been gone for a while, we're going to start you at the bottom kicking people's ass. We're going to start you with, you know, maybe a Baron Corbin or maybe a this guy or maybe a that guy, and you're just going to get, you know, asses kicked. And build you up again. Once the crowd's all about you again and how tough you are and how hard you are to beat, then we'll give you some main events. They didn't. They threw him directly into a title picture and then had him lose. So what does that tell you? Tells me that they basically said, well, now that you're inked your name, we don't really care. We don't know. We don't have anything for you. We don't have anything major for you to do. Just put Gunther over, make him look good. Okay. Well, that's a hell of a waste unless you're going to turn McIntyre heel. If you're going to turn him heel, it may not matter. So we'll see what ends up happening there. Todd, this was not as good a match as I had envisioned it to be.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, last night with Drew McIntyre wrestled Gunther for that Intercontinental Championship match. You're right. McIntyre looked like he was not too happy to be there. And like you said, his facial expressions, like he's not too happy how he's getting booked and everything.
Yeah, I think that I've accused wrestlers of this before. There are some wrestlers who I used to be able to tell whether they're winning or losing by their body language when they walked out or got in the ring. I don't want Drew McIntyre to become one of those. I really don't. So I think he's above that kind of a thing. Now, I want to take a short break in the SummerSlam recap to just talk briefly, because I think it's important. It's going to tie in to what we saw on SmackDown, because SmackDown was a debacle. I don't know what the hell the WWE is doing. You brought in Cameron Grimes and said, oh, yeah, he's going to be something, you know, we're going to do something with him. Yeah, and he's cannon fodder in his match with the guy from the LWO, Santos Escobar. So you think more Santos Escobar than obviously you do him, and I don't know. Well, I guess. Thanks for coming. Unbelievable. Then if that's not bad enough, you built up Solo as maybe even tougher than Roman Reigns, suffering one loss, and that's to Cody Rhodes, who basically got his ass kicked and then just barely was able to beat Solo by kind of outsmarting him and not just out-toughing him. Solo has been so protected that there are many people saying, well, he's actually tougher than Roman Reigns, you know? And Jey Uso beats him like he's a dog. Literally just, oh, well, you're cannon fodder because we got to get Jey built up for Roman, so bye. Okay. Well, that's a shock. So you protected Solo for what? I mean, that's crazy. Did some kind of double DQ. I expected someone. No, just 1, 2, 3, that's it. Clean victory, goodbye. Wow. Then did I not see J.D. McDonough in a battle royal last night just get his ass whooped? He says, oh, yeah, and by the way, there's some dude named J.D. McDonough in there. I thought he had some big plans for him. Yeah, I have big plans. What's going on? You're calling these people up from NXT for what reason? When's the last time we saw former tag team champions? Where are they? Women's tag team champions. Where the hell are they? You've really shit the bed with the NXT call-ups. I mean, you have shit the bed. Awful. So, yeah, I mean, SmackDown was a disappointment to me. I'm watching SmackDown. I'm saying, well, I guess the WWE is moving in a new direction. Cameron Grimes is a nobody, apparently. JD McDonagh is a nobody, apparently. Solo is no longer tough. Jey Uso can take him out, no problem. A guy who's basically a tag team wrestler, take him out, no problem. I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't like it. Anyway, let's get back to our SmackDown review. Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor. I've heard people say this was the match of the night. I don't know what card you were watching. This was an okay match. It was not match of the night. It might have been booking of the night as far as the booking was good. The touch of Seth Rollins wearing the vest that he wore when he hurt Finn Balor. I like that touch. I like the idea that the Judgment Day didn't come down originally with Finn. I like that touch. There were several things in this match I liked. But, I mean, again, you're looking at, I'm giving him the coup de grace, he kicked out. Okay, well, I don't know then. Bigger men didn't kick out. Seth Rollins, 215, and he kicks out. 315-pound man, he doesn't kick out. On a move that really has everything to do with your weight, force you're bringing down upon someone. The ending was good. The ending was good. Especially good was the reaction of Damian Priest, who just kind of shook his head like, you know, it didn't work out as planned. Finn initially said, I don't want the briefcase. But then changed his mind and said, throw in the briefcase, and it worked to his disadvantage. Clearly, this is it. Clearly, this is it. They didn't break him up right on the spot, but this is it. And it makes me wonder which guy's going to be the bad guy. I'm not 100% sure it's going to be Finn. I'm not 100% sure of that at all. I used to be, but I don't know. It would seem to me that the guy with the briefcase is going to be the heel, because the briefcase is usually a heel thing, and it could be Damian Priest. You might see Finn Balor revert back to being a babyface. Anyway, a long match, maybe a little bit too long. I am not, and I'm openly admitting, I understand Finn Balor is a very athletic, very gifted athlete. I've always found the majority of his matches to be boring. I don't like his moveset. I don't like his selling. I don't like there's a lot of stuff about him. I just don't get why people think he's that great. Now, maybe it's just my cup of tea or whatever, but his style does not appeal to me. Seth Rollins, however, his style does appeal to me. They work pretty well together. I like the touches of Finn Balor did the same thing to Seth Rollins on the outside of the ring, and then Rollins retaliated by doing it twice on the in the turnbuckles to him. There was a lot of good in the match. I don't think it was the match of the night. I think Logan Paul and Ricochet were better athletically, and I think a better story was Cody Rhodes and Brock Lesnar. But this was a good story, especially the ending. So it's not that it was bad, Mike. It's just that I just didn't live up to what I thought it was going to be.
Right. And when you've got people saying that, just, again, what card are you watching? When you've got two co-matches of the night that happened, what, hours ahead of this, probably?
Yep.
Match, you know, and you're calling this the match? I love Seth Rollins to death. He's another one of these cardio monsters. You know, he's AJ Styles. He's Cody Rhodes. That's what he is, right? And he could 30 minutes or an hour, and he's gonna look the same. You know, he's gonna look the same way, like he looks, right? You know, I mean, we've said it before about him. He's right now. He's AJ Styles minus 6 or whatever it is years that whatever it is that AJ Styles is older than Seth. So yeah, I love Seth Rollins. And look, that move that Finn Balor does. Finn Balor's maybe 200 pounds, and that's stretching it, right?
Yeah, it's stretching it, yes.
That's stretching it. I mean, you look at basically Cameron Grimes, that move that he does is basically the Finn Balor move. The cave-in is basically the Finn Balor move, but the difference is Cameron Grimes is about the same size as Seth Rollins. Maybe a little bit smaller, but not too damn far off, you know. So when you've got a guy that small, that's, I understand you're coming from the top rope and you're multiplying, you're trying to saying that you're multiplying your force by coming down on somebody. But again, you're trying to hit a 215-pound guy with a 180-pound guy, if that. What do you think we're supposed to think?
Well, see, that's the thing. Then it shouldn't be successful against 300-pound guys. The WWE does this a lot, and it's just not something I'm a fan of. It's just not. I'm also not a fan of a maneuver that relies upon like how big the other person is. Finn Balor's maneuver, his finishing maneuver, really relies upon how big you are. If you did that to Otis, that's got to be a hell of a lot different than if you did it to Chad Gable. Whereas a move like a DDT or whatever, it's the same. Matter of fact, it might be worse if you're heavier because there's more leverage coming down. So I was always a fan of a finishing maneuver that you say, well, yeah, that would work no matter who you are, I guess. You know, that looks devastating. Like the Claymore kick, you know, okay, well, if you get kicked in the face at a running speed by a 280-pound man as hard as you possibly can, I don't care who you are. I mean, if you're Finn Balor, it should damn near kill you. But if you're Brock Lesnar, look how Brock Lesnar sold it. Remember? At the Royal Rumble? Brock Lesnar sold it like a Mack truck hit him. Gunther kicks out of it. So is the implication that Gunther is tougher than Brock Lesnar? Now, if you're smart, you have Brock Lesnar come out there or do an interview on, you know, taped, whatever it has to be. He doesn't want to travel. And say exactly what I said to say. Everyone has always asked the question, why did I do what I did to Cody Rhodes? Why would I be that mean? Why would I be that cruel? Why would I be that deceitful? The answer is this. Cody Rhodes is one of the greatest athletes of our generation, but he lacked the killer instinct. He lacked that desire, and he lacked that belief in himself. And I decided I'm going to give it to him. I'm going to put him through hell like I've never put anybody through hell before. And if he quits, he didn't belong here. And if he doesn't quit, then he'll have a renewed sense of what it's all about. And not only did he not quit, he beat me. And he's one of the few people to beat me that I've ever shook the hand of, because I truly and honestly respect him. And he needs to now go forward and complete that story, because now, Cody, you're tough enough to do it. And remember who taught you that. Then immediately get him into a feud with Gunther, please. That's what we want to see. Now you've rehabbed Brock as a face. Get him into that feud with Gunther. So you got Brock Lesnar and Gunther. If you want to wait till WrestleMania, fine. Brock Lesnar and Gunther should be it, with Brock Lesnar clearly the face. Anyway, Seth Rollins and Finn Balor, good ending, Tom. Just, I wasn't too impressed with the match overall.
Yeah, the match seemed to be lacking a little bit, but the ending, here's my I don't have necessarily have a problem with the ending. What I am is confused, because now I don't know, I really don't know who's going to be the face and who's going to be the heel. I'm a little confused on that, because they kind of left it up in the air, and we don't know which way the pendulum's swinging. Is it Finn or is it Damian? I kind of like it that they left it up in the air, but I'm really hoping that they, like, go through with just completely breaking them up, because keeping them together and, you know, said, hey, you know what, we're going to keep them together. It shows their unity, and it should stop. They've done that so many times now, where they tease the breakup and they just keep them together. They get back together and they talk it out. Stop. Just break them up already, and let's.
So let me ask you this, Tom. What do you think of this booking? Because this is what I would have done. Damian Priest comes down, offers Finn Balor the briefcase. Finn Balor says no. Later, referee's down. Finn Balor's hurt. Seth Rollins is down, and Finn says, give me the briefcase, give me the briefcase, give me the briefcase. He gives him the briefcase. Referee gets back to his feet, sees Finn Balor with the briefcase, threatens to disqualify him, and Finn Balor says, no, no, Damian Priest is cashing in. Priest is like, what the hell are you talking about? That way he doesn't want to be disqualified, because he's going to lose his title shot if he's disqualified. So now he's lying and saying, no, Damian Priest told me to cash this in for him. And the referee says, Damian Priest has just cashed in. Now Damian Priest is like, what the actual F? And in the argument between the two, Finn gets rolled up for the three. And Damian Priest attempts to beat Seth Rollins, does not do it, and then the feud begins, because he's going to say, you cost me the Money in the Bank goddamn briefcase. And Finn Balor's excuse could have been, I would have been disqualified by the referee if I didn't say that. I mean, I think that would have been a better booking.
That would have been very, very interesting. At least we have a reason now to go on with the feud, or at least give that feud between Finn and Damian. It would have been something if the referee bought it and said, okay, he's cashing in, and Damian Priest, just instead of
right.
doing so, like going after Seth, he's just arguing with with Finn Balor.
That's what I want, arguing with Finn, saying, what the F, right? Then you'd have the two perspectives, because Finn could have said, look, the Money in the Bank briefcase isn't important. If you're good enough to beat Seth Rollins, you can do it without the Money in the Bank briefcase. Why do you need it? I couldn't be disqualified. Then I would have lost my shot. So you should be happy that I was able to come up with something like that. And, of course, Damian Priest would say, what are you talking about, happy? I had a guaranteed way to get to the title, and you took it from me. I just think that would have been a hell of a lot better and more interesting booking, Mike.
Yeah, but again, this is the WWE, and we've talked about the WWE and lack of interest in their booking. You know, I mean, this is your general WWE booking. What can you say about it?
Yeah, not much. I mean, again, it was kind of a flat thing, and it leaves it with Finn Balor and Damian Priest kind of, we don't know if we're on the same page, Todd. You know, this story's getting old, but move forward.
I absolutely like that. Like you said, this whole thing with the Judgment Day and everything, and the Finn Balor wrestling the Rollins there last night, it, by the looks of it, like you said, it looks like if they turn Finn Balor back to a face, I think they will probably have, like, the Balor Club Finn Balor thing.
Yeah, well, you know, we will see what happens with this, you know, but I think they missed an opportunity to have a much better story here and a much more like, oh, my God, last night moment. We then get to Asuka, Charlotte, and Bianca Belair. What can I say about this? First off, let me say this. Since Asuka's been the champion, she's never felt like the champion. She's never been treated like the champion. She's never really felt like she's the champion. It felt like, well, she got lucky and she got a belt. So bad, bad handling of Asuka. Charlotte Flair coming back, basically saying, I'm going to be the new champion and everything, that seemed like a guarantee. Bianca Belair looked like she was set to be the heel. Since the Street Profits have turned heel and all that kind of stuff, which was one of the only good things that happened on the show, but the crowd cheered instead of booed, so we'll see where that goes on SmackDown. Some of this match was a mess. I'm not going to lie. Some of this match was a mess. Some of this match, I wondered, did you plan anything out? Because people are looking lost. It didn't feel, the pacing was weird. And some of the, I just don't know. It felt like a Raw match or a SmackDown match. It just didn't feel like a main event match. And I'm going to call both women's matches on the carpet with this. There's no excuse for this. If you want to be the main event and you want to be the big cheese and you want to be whatever, then you got to rise to the occasion. And they did not rise to the occasion. Now, I have called Bianca Belair the best women's athlete in the WWE, and I believe that. I've called Charlotte Flair the best pure wrestler in the WWE, and I believe that. And I've called Asuka one of the best women's wrestlers of all time, and I believe that. So if all those three things are true, why was this match a mess? Because you weren't trying. So effort in is what you get out. And what you got out was not much. Now, it was a surprise when Bianca Belair won. I said, holy crap. That's one scenario I did not expect, since she was the one who just barely lost the belt. But then I realized the cash-in was coming. Io Sky comes in, cashes in successfully, gets cheered. Gets a huge pop. Now, if this leads to a series of Io Sky versus Asuka matches, I'm all for that. All for it. Even if it leads to Io Sky and Bianca Belair or Charlotte Flair, I'm all for it. But I'm going to call things the way I see it. And last night, Charlotte Flair looked lazy. Last night, Asuka looked confused. And last night, Bianca Belair looked like, I don't really want to do this. And I just don't think that's the proper attitude to have when you're in a SummerSlam match, Mike.
Yeah, the only ones that look like they really want to be there was Damage Control.
Yep.
Right? Isn't it? I mean, even Dakota Kai looked like she wanted to be there. You know, yeah, she's just coming back. I get that. But you get what I'm saying, right? I mean, and like I said it on Friday. I brought up the fact that I've been reading that Kyrie Sane's on her way back.
Yep.
So
I heard. Yep.
If EO has the championship and Asuka's there and Kyrie Sane, they're tied with each other. EO and Kyrie were a tag team. They were the Sky Pirates. Asuka and Kyrie were a tag team. They were, you know, the Kabuki Warriors. They were a decent tag team. All right, I get that. The other two were a really good tag team down in NXT. And if we get several matches between these three women, or if we get all three of them at some point combining together, I'm all for that. And if this is a way to get there, I'm all for that.
So am I. I just think that, you know, there were some blunders here. There were times when Charlotte looked lost and Bianca looked lost. There was that one move after Charlotte hit the moonsault and Asuka tried to do something off the top rope. I don't even know what she was trying to do that just absolutely crashed and burned. It just didn't look like they were all that well prepared, Tom.
This match, I'm going to call a spade, this match was a clusterfuck, Marcus. I've never seen anything out of three performers that usually light it up in every single match they're in. I don't think I've ever seen Bianca have a bad match, or Asuka, or Charlotte for that matter, and this was horrendous. The fact that I don't know what Charlotte hit or was trying to hit on Asuka, but it looks like she didn't even touch her, like she was trying to go for a bulldog. And what was worse about it is I just threw my hands up right after the announcer sold it. He's like, oh, Asuka added a new, or Charlotte added a new move to her repertoire. No, she didn't. I understand you're trying to fix the blunder, but Jesus. That was bad. That is just even the announcement.
And you know what the thing is? We've come to expect so much more from them. If this was three of your just whatever, you know, normal women from the WWE, not this championship quality, you'd say, well, it was pretty good. It was all right. But I came to expect so much more from all three of these that I said, look, this could steal the show. You have Charlotte Flair, best technical women's wrestler in the WWE. Bianca Belair, easily the best athlete overall in the WWE. And Asuka was so much experience and so one of the best female wrestlers maybe of all time. And if you can put three of them in the ring and get this, that's not good. Sorry, it's just not. I'm glad for Kairi Sane and all that, but Todd, this did not live up to expectations at all.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this match last night between Asuka, Charlotte Flair, and Bianca Belair, it looks like all three of them looked like they were out of place. Like they didn't want to be there. It looked like they were don't want to perform from everybody.
I just think they were lost. I don't know whether there's a communications breakdown or the match got lost in translation somehow. Something happened. And then it just broke down into, well, since all three of us aren't sure what's going on, I'll fight you for a little while, and then you fight me for a little while, and then this other third one can fight you for a while. It never felt like it was a true triple threat where there was a lot of spots that you're like, oh, cool, you know? It just didn't do that. And Bianca Belair also sort of felt like, I know I'm winning, but losing, and I'm not happy about it. I don't know. Again, if you're gonna bitch about not being included on the cards, then the people who are included in the women's division got to step it up, because both of these matches did not live up to expectations as far as I'm concerned. We then get to Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso. This was a long match. Some people say too long. It was good. They're making Jey Uso look like Superman, which I'm not 100% down with, because Jey Uso should always look like the underdog, not the Superman. But okay. At some point, Solo comes out, and here we go again. I don't know what – again, I said, well, what's the point of this feud? Solo just lost on Friday night, and it lost relatively easily. So I don't understand the point of this. There was a lot of false finishes, though. I'll give them that. And there was a couple of finishes that I really thought were legit. They had me a couple times. There was a couple times when I said, oh, hell, they're giving this to Jay. Now, I had predicted somehow Jay's going to walk out of here with this tribal chief wreath. That did not happen. I thought maybe you'd see the elders there or something. That did not happen. But we also did, in fact, come up with a scenario that happened. If you listen to our show on Friday, we said the only other thing that makes sense, Jay's got to come out of this if he loses. He's got to come out of this with a feud. It can't be solo because he's feuding with him on Friday, unless it's a double disqualification and it continues. So what would the chances be that they bring Jay back to double-cross his brother? Could happen, and it did happen. Now, there's a lot of people saying this makes no sense. You've built up for months and months and months that they would never betray each other, that they would stick by each other's side no matter what, blah, blah, this, blah, blah, that. You blew the storyline. You've ruined it. You've shit the bed on the bloodline. Incorrect. Remember when Jey Uso finally turned on Roman Reigns, he asked his brother directly, did you say I'm not ready to be the tribal chief and you're against it? And he said, yes, I did say that. And then Jey said, well, you're out, but I'm out too, and kicked Roman Reigns. But Jimmy never denied saying it. And now Jimmy, all you have to do to justify this is Jimmy say, we were always a tag team. And then Jey became obsessed with being the tribal chief. I heard him from the hospital saying, I'm the new tribal chief. I'm the new whatever. And so what is it? F your brother, right? F our tag team. Because now you're going to be obsessed with this nonsense. You want to be the tribal chief. You think you're better than everybody else. Screw you. And then it makes sense. Makes perfect sense. So, no, you did not kill the bloodline storyline. You've actually just added a very unusual wrinkle to it, and that is, what about Jimmy's mentality has told him, I can't let my brother beat Roman? Well, I've just told you. He doesn't want him to be the tribal chief. He admitted he didn't want him to be the tribal chief. He admitted he said that to Roman Reigns. So how is that bad story writing? That's because now he can say, I told you right to your face when you asked me that I said you're not ready to be the tribal chief, and you're not. Because I thought the most important thing was that we were a tag team, and we were the best tag team in the world, and that's the way it was going to stay. And then all of a sudden, when I get put out of the picture, I hear you in the ring saying you're the new tribal chief. You're main event Jey Uso from now on, and who am I supposed to be? The guy who carries your bags into the arena? That works. So for the people who are saying the storyline makes no sense, Mike, the storyline actually does make perfect sense.
It does make perfect sense. And, you know, I don't want to say surely, but you know that they're going to get back together. You know it's coming, right?
Yeah.
Once they decide to take the titles away from Roman and he goes away, then and only then, and when they decide that it's time to give a solo a major push, not just him as the hired gun of the bloodline, right? But a major push, you know it's coming. You know that they're going to get back together. That's the end goal, is to get these two back together. And you know at some point, also you know at some point that I know she just won the title over there in Impact. You know at some point, Naomi's coming back. You know that, right?
I would hope. We will see what ends up happening there. But you know you got at least two branches on this tree. You've got Jey Uso having a jealous brother who literally says, I told you to your face I didn't want you to be the tribal chief. You and me are supposed to be the greatest tag team, and if you go off on your own and try to be main event Jey Uso, where does that leave me? That's not fair. The me, Jimmy Uso, who the fans are going to boo out of the building. Or you could have Jimmy Uso make a little bit of sense and say, listen to me. We loved Roman. We still love Roman to a certain extent. He was one of us, man. We weren't brothers, but we kind of were. And look what happened to him. You know what changed him? The title and the tribal chiefery. That's what changed him. I don't want you to be Roman. And that's what's going to happen to you. You're going to get this around your neck. You're going to get the belt. And you're going to just turn into a smaller version of Roman. And you got to get your head screwed back on right, because we don't want that. That makes sense. That makes perfect sense, too. And Jay could say, but that's not what I would have done. I'm not going to turn into Roman. Yeah, but that's what Roman said, and look what happened to Roman. You want to be Roman? You want to be that guy that we all tried to get away from? Because that's your future. I'm looking at you, and I'm seeing Roman. So I'm protecting you from that, because I am your brother, and I care about you, and you don't want to go there. That makes sense. It actually makes sense. Or you could do both. You could have Jimmy come up with that excuse, and then when you want to put them back together, Jimmy could come out with the real truth and say, well, this is the real reason. I didn't want to super kick you, but I also didn't want you to be Roman Reigns. And that's where you were heading. You were getting a swelled head. That's what happened to Roman. You were going to get the tribal wreath. That's what happened to Roman. You were going to get the title. That's what happened to Roman. And the next thing you know, we didn't even recognize it. Works. So there's a couple of branches on this tree. So for the people who say, you know, the storyline doesn't make any sense, I think it does, Tom.
Perfect sense, not only because of everything you just said, but it shows that, it's, you know, again, we talk about, you know, psychology, not only ring psychology, but story psychology. This proves that everything you just went over, that Jay took a piece of real estate out in Jimmy's head, and now he doesn't trust him to not become Roman.
Right.
That's interesting. That's very interesting,
right.
And it's intriguing. And you don't know, we don't know if Naomi's going to come back now. We don't even know if Jimmy's going to go with Roman. We have no idea. It certainly didn't look that way. He didn't stand in solidarity with Roman and Solo. So
right. We
don't even know. That is interesting. So for anybody who says they ruined the bloodline, no, it's exactly the opposite. This was something that I was waiting for all event. The story, or not all event, all the whole match. I said, I know something's going to happen. Boy, am I glad it wasn't Bray Wyatt's return. I was very, very happy that they ended it this way.
Yeah, me too, because when it didn't happen all night, I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no. But, yeah, look, you've got a very fascinating way to do this. And if you want to tell a slow story, I mean, if I'm the author of this and they say, Marcus, you got this handled, then Jimmy says to Jay, I ain't with Roman or the bloodline, but I ain't with you either. Because you're just turning into a version of him. I can see it coming. With Jay saying, not true, not true, you're jealous. You were always jealous. Because Roman picked me and not you to be the successor. And let them be at each other's throats for a while. And then at some point, have Jey Uso do something to Jimmy that's incorrect. That's not good. And then you have that come to Jesus moment, as we used to hear, where Jey Uso says, my God, I am becoming Roman. He was right. He was right from the very beginning. What did I do to my brother? I became Solo. I became Roman. And I don't want it. And he hands back that tribal wreath and says, I don't accept it. It's broken this family. The tradition is done. The tradition is dead. We don't live in these times anymore. And whoever puts this damn thing around their neck, it seems to poison their mind, and it seems to poison the whole family, and I'm done with it. And you've got the team back together again. It's an easy storyline to last all the way to WrestleMania, if not longer. So you've got so much fertile ground to write with. That's all you can ask for if you are a writer. Give me some fertile ground. Give me some space to come up with several different things. Don't put me in a box and tell me how to write, because then there's only one possible outcome, and it's, you know, it writes itself, and there's no reason for me. Give me some fertile ground to work with where I can say, well, we have several options. I could write it this way. I could write it that way. We could take a swerve here. We could do that. That's what we always call the branches on the tree. This has a lot of branches on the tree. Don't be so quick, as Tom said, to just assume, oh, he's back with Roman. That's probably not true. I think we're going to see a jealousy factor where Jay says you're jealous of me, and Jimmy is acting like he's jealous of him, but eventually the truth comes out that he doesn't want him to become Roman. And we'll have that come together moment. We'll have a tag team probably beat Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. That's a diabolical tag team, and these two brothers are at each other's throats, and nobody else seems to be able to beat them. And then eventually there'll be a moment where Jimmy and Jay say, it's time for us to do this again. And there you got your new tag team champions, and you got the brothers reuniting. You got a big story. Take it chapter by chapter. But please, please, if you're a wrestling fan, pay close attention to the stories, because the WWE won't write them complicated if they think you don't remember. See, the WWE is like, oh, the fans, span of remembering stuff is like a goldfish, so we can write things that are not logical, and they won't know. If you want them to continue to write logical stuff, you want them to write complex angles, you got to show them, yes, we are paying attention. Yes, we do understand the little subtle things. And you all forgot, not everybody on this panel, we remembered, but a lot of you forgot that Jimmy Uso looked right at Jay and said, yes, I did say you weren't ready to be the tribal chief. Yes, I did say I was against it. There's your reason. They gave you the reason months ago. Don't forget those things, because then they won't do them anymore. They'll say, oh, nobody remembered that, so why bother setting something up a month ahead of time? They're hoping that in that moment you say, oh, that's why he said that. Now I get it. And if you don't, if you say, well, that don't make any goddamn sense, well, then you weren't paying attention, because it does make sense. So we'll see what ends up happening here. But it does make sense to me, and I think it's just going to elongate this angle. With the bloodline, take it in a new direction. No matter what you say, there's going to come a time, and it's probably going to be before SummerSlam next year, where every single one of these people are still going to be in the bloodline and are all going to be faces. Just going to take a long time to get there, because they understand this is their cash cow, this is their storyline, this is the biggie. And they're trying to run with it as long as they can, and I don't blame them. Let them tell the story. A soap opera takes years and years and years sometimes to get to that one episode where you're like, can't miss this. Well, let them get to that episode. And it will be well worth the ride, well worth the wait. So, Todd, I thought this was fine. You know, the match was long, but it was fine.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that match would Jey Uso and Roman Reigns last night. It was a pretty long match. And there was a part where Solo took a clothesline or a spear from Roman there, and that one spot was like, the fuck did you try to do to me? That one spot.
Yeah, that's another little branch on the tree. That's correct. There's another little branch on the tree. Solo was angry about that. So there's a little bit of a branch on the tree. I don't know, by the way, if you noticed it, Mike, but there was a part in the match where Jey Uso threw a punch and it potatoed Roman right in the side of the head.
Hey, yeah, I noticed that, and that was interesting. I mean, obviously, probably they worked that out, all right? I mean, you're going to potato me and all that stuff, because that's the way those things generally happen. Unless you're Gunther and Sheamus, right? Those two guys,
right.
It doesn't matter. But that's not who this is. This is Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. They're family. They know each other. All right, I'm gonna allow you to potato me, right?
Well, there's no doubt that it was an accident, but at the same time, he's not going to be mad about it. I mean, yeah, you're right. You know, Roman's automatically going to say, well, I know it's an accident. But, man, he caught him. He caught him good.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, storyline-wise, I mean, we were all, the last, say, 2 or 3 months or whatever it was, we've been asking, where's this storyline going? You know, it seemed like it was on a treadmill. It seemed like, you know, it seemed like they ran out of ideas for it. Now here we go. They breathe new life into this storyline. And maybe they don't. At one point, they were thinking about trying to bring Sami Zayn back into it. Now, granted, now that we'll talk about Sami in a little while, probably, now that we know that for sure Kevin Owens is going to be gone, they're going to have to strip those titles. And I don't know if that means that they're going to have to speed up this storyline, or are they going to put the titles around somebody else as an interim basis until this storyline with Jay and Jimmy is over with.
Yeah, I think they're going to give somebody else a chance. Could very well end up being the Street Profits. But anyway, all in all, a decent SummerSlam. Wasn't A+ by any stretch of the imagination. We'll give our ratings in a minute, but it was a decent and entertaining, if not a little bit long, SummerSlam. A couple of things we did want to mention, of course, is that SummerSlam this year went up against the AEW's TV show, Saturday Night TV show Collision, right? And more patting ourselves on the back. Remember when everyone was saying, CM Punk lost to Ricky Starks in the Owen Hart Memorial thing? You see, CM Punk is so benevolent, he's putting people over. Yeah, what happened this week? Oh, that's right. When it was for the title, he pins Ricky Starks. Gets his victory back. Oh, gee, there's a surprise. When it counts. That's all I can tell you. Listen, I don't know what the ratings are going to be. Probably disastrous because, let's face it, more people are going to be watching SummerSlam than they're going to be watching Collision. So this week, heavy competition. Now, the WWE wants to hang their hat on. We had 59,000 plus last night, and they did. But AEW is going to draw more to Wembley Stadium. They're definitely going to draw more. But again, that's the first time they've been down there, I guess. So, you know, it's a big deal. It's a first-time thing. Can you do it on a regular basis? I don't know. WWE's been to Detroit many times. So I don't know if it's a fair comparison, really. We'll see what happens as far as the ratings go when they come out. I would expect them to be extraordinarily low because of SummerSlam. CM Punk says, oh, we're not going head-to-head with SummerSlam. Well, yeah, you are. What part of you're on at the same time isn't going head-to-head? So, no, we're competing with ourselves. We're competing with what we did last week. Spare me the non-intellectual psychology and philosophy. Spare me. Competing with every television show that's on in your time slot. And if you think you're not, well, then I don't have to tell you. You are. That's how ratings work. So we'll see what happens there, but I will say this, they have an excuse for it. So if they come out with 300,000 or whatever, okay, well, what do you expect? As long as it doesn't stay that way next week, you're okay. But I know Punk had to be a little bit upset that when he gets his big victory back over Ricky Starks and defends his title, there's less eyes on it than he probably would have wanted, Tom. So, you know, there's a little something.
Yeah, and CM Punk is delusional. How could you say anybody with a working brain can tell you that ratings work as in whatever is on at that time is what you're competing with? I don't care if SummerSlam wasn't on last night. Guess what? There was an NFL preseason game on last night at the same time, and you're competing with it. You're competing
right.
with women's soccer. You're competing with everything that is on. People are just not going to like, AEW is the only game in town on a Saturday night, and that's what everybody's watching. Either that or they're out, doing something else. They're not watching anything else on TV. Completely delusional.
More than delusional, he comes up with this word salad. He's like, we're not competing with the WWE SummerSlam. We're competing with ourselves and how good we were last week as opposed to this week, just like we're competing with ourselves of how good a wrestler we are yesterday as opposed to today. Please. Please. I mean, spare me the philosophical bullshit. Okay? It's not CM Confucius. You're not competing with how good a wrestler I was yesterday as opposed to today. You're competing for a TV rating. Tell that to the sponsors. We're actually only competing to see if we're better today than we were yesterday. See what the ratings, see what the sponsors say to you. Ridiculous. Anyway, all things considered, I liked more things in SummerSlam than I disliked. I thought the WWE made a critical mistake in the way that they arranged the matches. Had you wanted to, you should have started out with a Battle Royal. Because LA Knight's winning. So the crowd's now popped. Then let Ronda and Shayna do their thing. The crowd would have been hotter. Then go for Ricochet and Logan Paul, and that crowd would have been primed. Then if you want to, you can maybe go for the women's match. Then Brock Lesnar and Cody. Because the way you did it here, you didn't do them any favors. Or at least Drew and Gunther, if you didn't want to do Brock Lesnar and Cody. The placement was okay for the triple threat match, but Ronda's and Shayna's was not. So, yeah, I mean, we had this argument about, well, should they add another women's match? They could have, because they could have put the Battle Royal on the pre-show, but now we know why they didn't put a Battle Royal on the pre-show, because they wanted the big LA Knight pop, and he got it. So that was successful. They wanted the big Cody Rhodes pop, and he got it, which was successful. The things that they wanted and the things that they actually tried to promote, for the most part, were successful. The women's matches fell apart last night. I'm sorry if that disturbs you. I'm sorry if that makes me sound misogynistic. I'm just telling you the truth. There was not one women's match on that card that lived up to the worst male match of the night. Not one. Do you honestly think the triple threat was better than Logan Paul and Ricochet? No. Better than Brock Lesnar and Cody? No. Better than Drew McIntyre and Gunther? No. Better than Seth Rollins and Finn Balor? No. And certainly not better than Jey Uso and Roman Reigns. So no, I'm sorry. Those were the two least received matches. So I would suggest you try harder. Push the women's division more. Give us a reason to root for somebody. Right now you don't have a reason to root for too many people. So, by the way, was I the only one that for a split second during the women's match, the three-way, when the lights went down for a second and there was a little bit of music, I said, Jesus, it's not Bray Wyatt. It's not going to interfere in this one, is he? And then I realized, no, that's EO's. But for a split second, I was like, oh, shit. Now, as far as the Bray Wyatt thing is concerned, I'm still hearing he has health issues. I don't know what kind of health issues you could possibly have for this long. It's got to be a mental health issue. This long, you need to retire because you're not injured. They're not saying he's injured. They're saying he's sick. Well, that's months and months and months. I recovered from sepsis in less time. And that's deadly. So what the hell is going on with Bray Wyatt, I don't know. Now, I don't know whether they're just lying about that and they're waiting for a specific thing to bring him back, or I don't know. But what I'm hearing is, oh, no, he's still considered unhealthy right now. I don't have to tell you about it. Anyway, my rating this SummerSlam is I'm going to give it a B-. I thought the good things were very, very good. The bad things were relatively minimal. The women's match is disappointed. I wasn't super thrilled with Drew McIntyre and Gunther's, but for the most part, it was entertaining, watchable, and at its best, it was super. You know, there was certain parts of matches that I was really, really impressed with. So I'll give it a B- overall, Mike. What's your score?
I got to give it a B- as well. And the fact of the matter is, this isn't WrestleMania. This is SummerSlam. And it was kind of long, but I guess, 4 hours, considering that you might have wanted to give some of these matches a little bit more time. I can handle that, you know, and the problem is you're gonna have to get into Drew McIntyre's head and correct his thinking.
Yeah, I agree. Turn him heel at this point. Turn him heel. Turn him heel and feud him with Seth. That'll be interesting, I guess, because where does Seth Rollins go from here? Who's his feud? I guess Damian Priest still to some extent, but, I mean, that's going to be counterproductive because you know you're going to have Priest and Finn, so that's not really going to do much for Seth because you always know, oh, well, the other one's going to come out and stuff. So I don't know. I would much rather see at this stage of the game, I think Drew McIntyre's face usefulness is dwindling, and he needs to turn heel. And needs to become like a badass heel that's, you know, extraordinarily hard to beat. And maybe give the rub to Sheamus as the big baby face who tries to stop that or whatever you want to do. And then let's go from there because this isn't working. And I'm sure he's very disappointed that his first feud back was unsuccessful. Tom, what's your rating?
Goodness. I'm not going to give it as high as a rating as a B. Minus, but I'm going to give it a middle C, only because I was really disappointed. And this is the match that after they built up the feud of Shayna and Ronda, and did an extraordinarily well segment on them talking about each other and their history. It was bad, but that's the only thing I disliked about SummerSlam, but it takes a lot of points off because you built something up so big and then the crowd was just crickets. They looked like they didn't even know. They looked like two amateurs. It was bad. I don't know if I'm the only one who's, you know, in this school of thought about this match, but I did not find it entertaining at all. I think it did nothing to solidify their feud. I think it did nothing to further any kind of, storyline between the two. And now what's next for either of them? Well, now what's next for Shayna?
See, what I thought is this. I didn't think it was as bad as everybody's made it out to be. It's just I think the placement of it was terrible, and I think the rules were arbitrary. They weren't MMA rules at all. And I don't even know why you did that. What you should have done, if you really wanted to make this successful, Shayna Baszler should have been the one to say, Ronda. Maybe it's true. Maybe it's true that if we were in an MMA ring, you'd beat me. Maybe that's true. But we're not in an MMA ring, Ronda. We're in a professional wrestling ring, and I got a news flash for you. You may be the Ronda Rousey of MMA, but I'm the Ronda Rousey of professional wrestling, and you're not. The problem is you can't handle the fact that you're not a good professional wrestler, and I am. And that's what we're going to be doing on Saturday, Rhonda. And I'm going to expose you as a phony and someone who is not a good professional wrestler. And that would have worked because then you said, well, okay, Rhonda's still a tough-ass MMA fighter, but Shayna's right. She's not a professional wrestler, and Shayna is a professional wrestler, and she wins with professional wrestling moves. Not MMA. How is this going to promote Ronda Rousey going back to the MMA when she lost to Shayna Baszler in an MMA match? It's mind-blowing. At least then, It would have been Shayna Baszler sticking up for pro wrestling, saying, I know you came in here with a smirky face thinking you're going to be a badass because you think you're a legitimate badass, and you're coming in here with all these pro wrestlers can't handle me. I got news for you, Rhonda. You were not able to handle pro wrestling, and that's what made you bitter, because you thought you were going to come in here and it was going to be a cakewalk and everybody was just going to lay down and you were going to be the queen, and it didn't happen because you weren't good enough. That would have been awesome. Unfortunately, Mike, they didn't go that direction.
Yeah, unfortunately. And as far as what happened, we know eventually Charlotte's going to get there. Eventually now. She is 37 years old. And, yeah, I mean, look, I get that, you know, Natty is what, 40-something in her mid-40s?
Yep.
But at some point, Charlotte's athleticism is going to wane, right? And that's another thing that happened in that match is, what was she thinking trying to put the figure eight on two people at the same time?
Yeah, that's a physical impossibility. I don't know. See, that's another thing. It just wasn't even well thought out. That's my main problem. It really felt like the first time they ever met each other was backstage 5 minutes before their music hit. That's what that match felt like. Oh, I'm fighting you? Okay, well, we'll talk about it when we get in the ring. Well, this is SummerSlam. That's what it felt like to me. Todd, what was your rating on SummerSlam overall?
I'm going to go with you on this one, a B-.
Yeah, it wasn't awful. There were some good things. This started out, by the way, like gangbusters. Logan Paul and Ricochet, great match. Brock Lesnar and Cody, great match. Battle Royal was way more fun than I thought it was going to be. Way more fun than I thought it was going to be. They had the right guy win. The crowd went nuts. And I'm like, wow, you guys are off to a great start here. And then you just totally shit the bed with Ronda. The Drew McIntyre and Gunther was underwhelming. And it kind of brought the crowd into a feel. Now, they picked it back up by the time the main event hit, but it's a little late. And by the way, just one extra word, obviously they've given up on Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle standing in that ring for that battle royal and just getting thrown out like he was a jabron. I was like, wow. The shine has come off of that one, Mike. I think that they've realized Riddle's got too many personal problems, and he's just going to be an also-ran from now on.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's sad. And like I said, I'm just excited to see where this whole Io Sky thing goes with this thing, because we know eventually Charlotte's going to get her hands back on that championship, and we know eventually that even if she has to turn heel, that eventually, what's her name? Bianca's going to get her hands back on the thing. So what happens between then and now is now and then is up in the air, because Io's got the championship, and we know Asuka's going to want another shot at the championship, and we know we have a good feeling that Kairi Sane's on her way back.
Yep. Yeah, as a matter of fact, it seems that that's just inevitable. It's going to be very, very soon. So we will see. By the way, one quick story I want to relate to you guys that I thought was funny. Saw LA Knight actually doing an interview, and they asked him, where did you come up with, like, the everybody thing, you know, that you were doing in NXT and then you were doing it in WWE? And he said, well, I used to work at a food place, and if you came through the door holding trays or holding food, somebody might be coming through the other end of the door, so you were supposed to yell corner so people knew you were coming through so you didn't crash. But he said, I didn't want to yell corner, so I used to yell everybody, and that's where it came from. Now, this is a guy who waited many, many, many years for this success. And if the WWE screws this up, if the WWE drops the ball on this, it's not even about LA Knight anymore. If you drop the ball on this, there's going to be a lot of professional wrestlers who are looking at this saying, if you can't make him with the popularity he currently is enjoying, if you can't successfully make him something, how in the hell are you going to make me something? I don't want to come to the Federation. Because if you can drop the ball on this, which is a lob pitch, right, then I have no faith that you could make my character or me a star. This is a no-brainer. So the WWE has to understand the eyes are watching you. It's not just about LA Knight. It's about future people signing with the WWE because they're going to take a look at this. And they're going to say, let's see what they do with him. Do they make him an uber star or do they drop the ball? A lot of wrestlers who, like MJF, for instance, who might say, yeah, I don't know if I want to go there, man. They couldn't make LA Knight with the crowd reaction. He's getting a success. How do I know they're not going to drop the ball with me? See what I mean, Mike?
Yeah, I see what you mean. And that's the thing. We'd always said that MJF is WWE. Right. You know, and I still believe that. I still believe that MJF would be better off in WWE than AEW. But the WWE has a habit of dropping the ball on people. So
that's right.
Right. If they drop the ball on LA Knight, then it's not likely that MJF ends up there.
I agree, because if I'm MJF and I'm looking at LA Knight and I'm like, oh my God, he's got it made. The ball on that, Tom. Why would MJF even think that they wouldn't drop the ball if he comes over?
Yeah, and it, you know, for a guy that they didn't have any faith in being a wrestler and they just wanted him to be a manager, and for him to capture, everything that he has now, if they just turn around and crap the bed with this, then why would anybody trust the WWE to, you know, do right by their...
That's my point. They won't. The WWE really needs to understand that this is bigger than just making something out of LA Knight. It's proving to potential WWE future signees that they will do something with you and they can successfully create superstars. Otherwise, a lot of these guys are going to take a hard pass. I'm sorry. Anyway, folks, we'll be back here on Tuesday with the Monday Night Raw Report. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.